The gospel reading is found in Matthew chapter 9, beginning at verse 35, reading through chapter 10, verse 8. Then Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and curing every disease and every sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." Then Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to cure every disease and every sickness. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, also known as Peter, and his brother Andrew. James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. Philip and Bartholomew. Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector. James, son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, Simon the Cananean, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions: "Go nowhere among the Gentiles and enter no town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. As you go, proclaim the good news. The kingdom of heaven has come near. Cure the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. You received without payment, give without payment." The gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. There is a tendency in our postmodern world to consider God as unnecessary, to put God on the sidelines. We really don't need God anymore, is the attitude. I heard a story about a very arrogant scientist who walks up to God one day and says, "God, we've decided that we no longer need you. Why, we're to the point when we can do most anything that you can do. We can maneuver our genetics. We can grow new body parts to replace those that wear out. We can even clone people. We can do many marvelous things, as you can do. We don't really need you anymore." Well, God listened patiently to the boasting of this proud scientist, and then God suggested that they have a contest, that they would each create a human being from scratch, like God did at the very beginning. And so the scientist agrees, and they begin. But the first thing that the scientist does is to bend down and pick up a handful of dirt to begin the process of creating a human. And God says, "No, no, no, that's cheating. I made that dirt. You start with your own dirt." We pretend that we can get along without God. But in our gospel reading today, we find a strange twist in this idea that we can live without God. The idea, in fact, is turned on its head. Not that we can live without God, but can God get along without us? Does God need us to carry on his work? Does God need the church? We believe that God can do anything. All things are possible with God. But has God decided to depend on us? The gospel reading this morning begins with a description of Jesus' work, going to all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news, and curing every disease and sickness. Jesus gets it done. But then as we read on in the text, it sounds like Jesus is overwhelmed by the numbers and the needs of the people. They are like sheep without a shepherd. There are so many. We hear Jesus saying, I need help. I can't do this alone. I need more workers. It's a rather odd way to put it. That God needs our help. But if the good news of the gospel is to find its way into people's hearts and lives, and people need to see God's love in action, somehow God has depended upon us to make it happen. While a lot of postmodern people are wondering whether or not we need God, this text is proposing the idea that God needs us. God needs the church to carry on his work. You probably know that near the beginning of his ministry, Jesus called 12 disciples. Each of the Gospels named them near the beginning of Jesus' ministry. He calls disciples those who would learn from Jesus and be his followers. We heard their names repeated again today in this reading. In any list of disciples, Simon Peter usually comes first, followed by Andrew and the Zebedee brothers, James and John. Some of the 12 are fishermen. Matthew was a tax collector. They were quite a motley crew. And there were others also, close followers of Jesus, including some women. But what I'd like you to notice in the text is the transformation that takes place among this group of disciples. They're no longer referred to as disciples or learners. That's the word. That's what the word disciple means, to be a learner. Now, if you notice, they're called apostles, which means those who are sent out. They've been in school. Now they've graduated to go out into the real world. And Jesus sends them out with instructions to do practically the same kind of work that he has been doing all along. We can think of those graduates at this time of year among us who are leaving school and setting off to find work, to get jobs. It can be a rather challenging and daunting experience to change from being a student to going out into the real world and getting a job done. That was the experience of these early disciples of Jesus. Imagine how they must have experienced this change, this transformation of from being a disciple, a learner, to being an apostle, one sent out. Barbara Brown Taylor, a Christian writer, writes this interesting scenario. There you are, perfectly content to be a follower, when Jesus comes home all worn out one day, with his hair hanging in his face and his clothes dripping with sweat and soiled with dirt. He looks around at those of you who have been with him all along and says, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. I need some help, and I'm nominating you. Then he holds his big hands over your heads and says a prayer that travels down your backbone like a chill, giving you authority over demons, over disease, even over death. And when he's finished, you open your eyes and look at each other to see if you can tell any difference. Next, you take a deep breath to test whether anything has changed inside you. Do you feel wiser, stronger, more capable? The writer goes on to imagine how the disciples experienced both the blessing and the burden of being transformed into apostles. Maybe we can pick up on that feeling ourselves. We've been attending church how many years now? We count ourselves among Jesus' followers. And then one day we wonder whether being a Christian is more than just sitting in a pew, listening, learning, attending. It's also about doing. And we think we might have heard our name called among the list of apostles. As in the days of old, there's so much to be done and so few workers. We look at the condition of the world today. Talk about sheep having no shepherd. We begin to wrestle with the idea that Jesus is calling us to help him. What is the purpose of my life? Why did God place me in this time, in this place, in this church? What is it that Jesus wants me to do? Do you ever ask those kinds of questions? The disciples of old had the privilege of following Jesus around and learning from him. Going back to the early chapters in Matthew's gospel, we read that Jesus taught in the synagogues, cured every disease and sickness, cast out demons. That was back in chapter 4. But in today's reading, in chapter 9, we have almost the identical description of what Jesus was doing. He's still doing it. I suppose if Matthew had been using a computer word program, he simply could have highlighted his chapter 4 and copied it and pasted it here in chapter 9. And he could have copied it and pasted it again in chapter 10 to describe the mission of the apostles. As you go out, proclaim the good news, cure the sick, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons, raise the dead. Whoa, where did that come from? Raise the dead. We never had training to do that. Tony Campolo tells a story of attending a funeral where the minister, after preaching the sermon to the congregation, went over to the coffin of the dead man and started preaching to him. After recounting some of his good deeds and telling him how much he would be missed, he said to the dead man, "This isn't goodbye, it's see you in the morning." Is that what Jesus meant when he told his disciples to raise the dead, to declare his power over death so that when people die, we can celebrate their new life? Or maybe some people are like the walking dead who find no purpose in life. They're all but dead with hopelessness and fear, perhaps addicted to drugs or something else. Jesus offers transformation and the rising up to new life, and this can come about even through us as we pay attention to people's needs. There is hope for them, even the so-called dead. We can raise them up. Sometimes we read the scriptures simply as an account of things that happened long ago in biblical times. Jesus chose 12 disciples whom he called to be apostles. He says, "The harvest is plentiful, the laborers are few, I'm sending you out." He commissions the 12 and sends them out. But what is pertinent in this text is that this commissioning is not only relevant to the 12 apostles in days of old, but to every Christian believer. We too are called and commissioned to be apostles, those who are sent out with the good news. It may seem strange that Jesus needs our help, and somehow we get into the mindset that our Christian faith is more about Jesus helping us. Well, we do need Jesus' help, plenty of it. But we have also been chosen to help Jesus. Many of us might give the excuse that we're already doing too much. We're too busy with too many things. We can hardly take on any more, especially doing the work of Jesus. Well, maybe it's not so much a matter of taking on more things in our lives to make them even more busy, but devoting our busy lives to being a Christian witness in the things that we already do. To be compassionate at work, to be honest in school, to be faithful and trustworthy with our family and friends. We can be healers in our relationships. We can even be a little political and advocate good health care for all. We can cast out demons, avoiding hate speech and resisting evil and violence. The thing on our mind today is the attack on our congressional leaders in Washington this past week, which might suggest that we spend time in reflection what it means, that it's time for everyone, especially those of us in the church, to be more intentional in creating an atmosphere of peace and respect in the world, and not to try to prove that one political party is more righteous than another. We all need to show more humility. What does it mean for us to do God's work? How is God depending upon us to bring peace and comfort and joy in our lives together? There's a story about a group of students who went to London, England, after World War II to help repair some of the damage. The bombs that were dropped in the city struck office buildings and schools and factories and homes and churches. In one church, there was a statue of Christ, which once had outstretched arms. And below the statue was the inscription from Matthew 11, "Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." But the bombs had broken off the statue's arms. And the student workers were having a hard time trying to restore the hands that had been broken off. They worked and worked and tried, but nothing seemed to work to replace the outstretched hands of Jesus. So finally they decided to let the hands remain missing and to change the inscription. Christ has no hands but our hands. Now to him who by the power at work within us is able to do far more than we can ask or imagine, to him be glory in the church and in Jesus Christ to all generations forever and ever. Amen.